Hey everybody, welcome to the Spill the OT podcast. I hope that you're all having an amazing week. And I have my peppermint tea here today. So what do you all have? Hopefully you got a tea, beverage, a little something while we celebrate all things OT. Today's episode is actually a little bit different. The interview is with me. So there has been this amazing prospective OT student who we started talking. And you know when you meet someone and you just instantly feel like that good vibe feeling? That's how I felt about her. And I think as the interview goes on with her, just her really creative ability to ask questions and get so invested, I think that you listening, you'll be able to just tell how amazing of an OT she's going to be one day because she just has a very special energy around her. I did, however, forget to ask what tea she was drinking. We drank tea while we were recording. I think turmeric ginger. That's been a favorite lately. So I think I was drinking turmeric ginger, but right now I got my peppermint and it's waking me up, which is good. But before we get into the interview, I just want to say thank you to the people who have been reading and reviewing the podcast. I see you, and sometimes it takes a couple of days for them to show up, but I can see that people have been doing it, and oh my God, thank you so much. So one thing I wanted to start trying in the last episode is answering your questions. So if you have an OT or PT or speech, you know, I'll do the best that I can to direct it to the right person to answer. But if you have a question, please leave a 5-star review and put your question in the review and I will address it on the podcast. So no questions yet, but I wanted to read this special one that it warmed my heart. So Kat Marrow wrote, I just listened to the episode with Andrea LaFleur. I loved this episode. Andrea is so incredibly knowledgeable and I had no idea this was an area of work was even a possibility in OT. Thanks so much for having her on. I have so many favorite interviews. It's hard to choose, but this one is particularly special right now. So Andrea is the community OT who worked with people in the homeless population. And oh my God, she, talk about a special energy. She definitely has that sparkle. And what she's doing is just so amazing and beneficial. And I think that OTs are 100% able to help people with the homeless population in more ways than one. And I think what Andrea is doing is incredible. So thank you for seeing her because she really is a special person. Okay, so we'll get into the interview pretty quick. If you stick around towards the end of the episode, I do have some announcements. So make sure you stay tuned for that. I am actually going to be taking a little break before season 3. I think season 2 has been really fun. I've loved connecting with everybody, and I think the interviews this season have been really special. So season 3 will be back, I'm thinking September 1st, possibly a little bit earlier, but there will be bonus episodes. So make sure that you subscribe to the podcast if you already haven't done so, because there's going to be a couple of bonus goodies coming out in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. And without further ado, let's get this interview started. Here we go. So today we are flipping the script a little bit and I am going to be interviewed. But before we get started, could you introduce yourself, Katie?
Hi, everyone. So my name is Katie and I am one of the many people going through, you know, career changes, assessing their life and their goals right now. And I've decided to work on my prereqs and learn all that I can to apply to occupational therapy school. So I am starting at the very, very bottom because my career has been all about marketing and communications so far. So I have a lot to learn and this podcast has helped me learn so much of it. So it's been really great getting in touch with the wonderful host and all these questions that I had for her, I think a lot of other listeners had, so really excited to hopefully, get them answered for all of us.
Awesome. And I think that you are just going to be the most amazing OT, and I feel like your marketing background will help your career because you kind of have to sell yourself as an OT. Like, you have to sell yourself to your patients because sometimes they're sick and they don't want to work with you, so you have to be like, hey, come work with me, and this is why. So
I noticed in your TikTok, one of your recent TikToks, that was a thing. The patient said, oh, I know what OT is. And you went, oh, yes. And everyone responded to that. And that was like, ooh, there's something in that.
Yes, so many times we are called the nurse or the PT or just the therapy lady. So there's a lot of like education and advocacy in small and big ways, kind of constantly.
What's funny too is I taught leadership, public speaking skills. So I did a lot of like helping people with career decisions and interpersonal dynamics. And so when I told people in my network I wanted to become an occupational therapist, they did a mistake that I think a lot of people probably make to other people, which is they went, oh, you're going to like be a career counselor, because it seems closer to what I've been doing. But I'm like, no, occupation has such a broader definition that people do not realize.
Yes, so many times I'll be usually with like an older adult and I'll tell them I'm the OT and they'll be like, oh, I don't need a job, I'm retired. Yeah. So yes, you'll get that a lot. But I do think that there's so many of us now that like we cannot be ignored. Eventually, I think everyone's going to know what OT is the way that they would know a PT or a speech pathologist.
Would you say that's one of your goals for podcasts, your TikTok, all the things you do?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a huge goal. My biggest goal, I think, is just to spread some joy. So if I had to sum it up in one word, I just want us to like have a community and have a little fun with it, because sometimes it can get really heavy. So I just want to bring a little sparkle.
You definitely do. Was there like a mentor that you had maybe going through school or early in your career that spread that joy for you?
Oh, yes. So I don't know if she would mind me saying her name, but I went to Towson University, and I'm just going to say it because she was so amazing. Her name was Lynn Murphy. And she just was so kind and easygoing and genuine that being in her presence, like let alone having the luxury of being her student, but just like being in her presence made you feel like special. So when she would teach, it just automatically like drew in my attention, and I think all of our attention, because she was just so easy to be around. So I definitely feel like if I could be like anybody, I'd like to be like her. She's just so sweet.
You bring a lot of joy to people with the content that you make already. And it's clear, you know, that being an OT is about giving a lot to patients and to people you mentor. So, and you've let us know that you are an empath. So that's especially, you know, it's a very complicated thing. So yeah. What recharges you? What brings you joy other than, you know, great mentors like that one? What do you love?
I need to have alone time. I've just realized that I totally need to just unplug and recharge. And sometimes that like uncharging might literally be me like sitting and watching Netflix. Like I just need alone time, because I think all of us, like our energy is so precious that if we are spending so much time trying to build up others, and you know, as an empath, you can feel whoever you're in the room with, you feel who's at their lowest and you want to bring them up. So you lower your own vibration by just being near them, because you want to like somehow make them comfortable, even if it's all subconscious. So it's a lot. So I think being in your own space has just been very healing for me. And then I love animals. So I have chickens, a rabbit that lives indoors, and I have a dog. And I just, you know, spending even like 10 or 15 minutes just with my animals charges me. And then I love to travel. So sometimes even just the planning of a vacation is what I enjoy. It's not even like actually going. It's just being like, oh my God, I'm going to go to London and we're going to go here and I'm going to take the tube, and like just getting really excited and planning is fun for me.
I love that too, like packing perfectly and even shopping kind of for it.
Yes. Yeah.
So with respect to HIPAA and all that, could you tell us about maybe a patient success story, one that was really, really memorable to you?
Yeah. So my favorite job by far was I worked in this school with kids with special needs, and all of these students were sent out of district and they came to this school. It's actually the oldest special needs school in the country. And it was just the most special place ever. I only left because my commute was brutal. But, well, I'm getting off track. But one thing is we would actually eat lunch with all the students. And that was just so special. So there'd be like two teachers to a table and then maybe six kids. And you just really got to know them and know like what's going on in their world. And just seeing that even though a lot of these kids were really physically involved or had a lot of impairments that you would think would affect their quality of life to a certain degree, you realize that like they're just teenagers and they have the same exact problems that all teenagers have. So like hearing about their crushes or hearing about broken hearts, and it just really opened my eyes, and it was just such a special place. So one of my favorite students to work with, she had cerebral palsy and she worked so freaking hard and her body was just working against her a lot of the time. So she got a power wheelchair and we were really trying to work on having her work on her neck extension so that she could select the drive switch was directly behind her head. And we were also trying to figure out a device for her to communicate with, because up until then she was in the double digits. I want to say like 11 or so at the time. And she just didn't have a really simplified way to communicate. She was using a pod system, which is pretty cumbersome. It's very cumbersome. You have to really like sequence through a lot of different options as far as talking, and you have to have a communication partner there to facilitate the pod system. So it's a little complicated, but we were just trying to streamline it so she could have an electronic device. Long story short, I worked very closely with PT and the speech pathologist, and I think just all of us coming together and working really ended up helping this student. So that's probably my proudest moment.
So sweet. On the flip side, I mean, is there a patient story that maybe still haunts you, still frustrates you?
Yes, I think this one actually really upsets me. And it was a patient and she was actively dying. And we were in a skilled nursing facility and therapy was inappropriate at the time. She should not have been on therapy. Her family was really pushing for therapy, so she continued to stay on until the day that she passed. And I just found it so frustrating that I think it's just like the Western medicine. I think sometimes we're just so focused on longevity that we forget to look at quality of life. And this woman was telling us she was ready, and we were kind of ignoring her wishes and forcing her to participate, and everybody was pressuring her when she was telling us what she wanted. She knew that she was ready to go and she was telling us. And instead, I remember being in her room and she told me she wanted to go. And honestly, I told her that it was okay. And our session, like, I didn't make her get up. I didn't make her move because I was like, she's telling us what she wants. And then she passed away that day. So it was just really frustrating for me to see that we were like forced to give these minutes. And I just think sometimes we need to really listen to what someone's telling us. And yeah, I guess that just haunts me because I know that PT ended up standing her that day and she did not want to move. And I've also felt like a failure during that session because I didn't do anything on paper that was therapeutic. I just tried to, I think I had her like wash her face and brush her teeth, and we did like light bedside ADLs and we just talked about life. And I think it's sad that sometimes we're put in a position where we have to like make a choice, and it's hard.
Yeah, because in that situation, I mean, your number one responsibility is to the patient, right?
Yes. And for this particular patient, her family was in the room, mm-hmm. talking about her as if she wasn't there, which was really frustrating because I'm always someone that, you know, they always say assume intelligence. So she was a little incoherent, but like you have to assume that that person is there and present and can understand you, even if they're not communicating that as clearly as we deem, I don't know, coherent. Mm-hmm. So the whole situation was really frustrating to be in.
So really, I mean, if the podcast, everything, it's about being real and talking about these things that I would never get to know until I was in that situation. So what's the balance? Is it 50% heartbreaking like that? Or is it 50% incredibly rewarding like the girl that you worked with? What's the truth here?
Okay, the truth is, I think it depends. And I think a lot of it, I hate to say, comes down to mindset, because no matter where you go, I would say the odds of it being 50-50 is probably slim. It's probably closer to, I was going to say 60-40, but you know, maybe 70-30. But I think if your mindset, if you are empathic and you don't know it, or if you are someone who gets triggered by an injustice, then I think that 30% can feel really big. So I think part of it comes down to mindset and what you can control. So even as I'm talking, I'm kind of like justifying my, and that patient I'm describing, this was when I was like 24, and I just feel for my 24-year-old self, because I actually do think I did a good job handling the situation, but at the time I just felt so crummy about it, because I felt like I wasn't doing enough. I felt like I wasn't doing enough for the patient, and I wasn't doing enough for my company, because technically, like, they want us to do therapy in a very boxed way. They want it to look like a certain way. And I just felt like I wasn't making anyone happy. And that was hard for me to go through. But overall, to be real, I would say it's probably a 70-30 balance. And that 30% probably is not going to be as heavy as I'm describing. That's probably more of like a 5% or 2%. Like, that's a much lower. But the heaviness can come in all sorts of ways, like meeting productivity and just need knowing yourself and knowing that you need to have a 5-minute breather between patients. But when your schedule looks like, all right, you have 7 to 8, 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, break at lunch, and then 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. And you just like look at that schedule and know that, like, how the hell are you supposed to get from one room to the next room within that 60-second time frame? It's not possible, unless you're working in the same room. So if you're kind of like a stickler for the rules, that's also hard to like see on paper, that you know you're not going to be able to meet that need. Like, especially if you have to go to the bathroom, like, I drink a lot. I know that I'm going to have to go to the bathroom at some point during the day. So that 30% can look like a lot of things.
What does productivity mean? Because I've been seeing that. I can tell it's something scary. I can tell it's kind of a little bit backwards at moments. What is it?
Oh my God, I'm so glad you asked. So it just means how much of your time is spent directly with the patient on patient care. Now, in skilled nursing facilities, it's a little confusing because they count productivity. And I don't know what the rules, I haven't been there in a long time. And I fully admit that when I was there, I was told some really shady business. Like, I worked for one company and the CEO is my first job. And the CEO gave me a handout and showed me like, okay, if you're billing, if you're seeing two patients and you're individualizing their treatments, then you bill as a individual session. So your productivity for that hour is 200%. Because you're seeing two people in 1 hour and you're billing as individual. What should be happening is you bill concurrent, which would mean like you're seeing them together. So then your productivity would be 100% for that hour. So, but also like nursing homes, I mean, I'm not trying to throw shade, but I totally am. They will count like a chart review as part of the productivity. So if you were to spend 20 minutes reading a chart review, then oftentimes they'll count that as part of the productivity. But coming from inpatient rehab, which is something I much prefer to a skilled nursing facility, your productivity counts as direct time with the patient. And I think that's the case for most settings, like outpatient accounts for the time you're with a patient. And then schools kind of have their whole other system because you might be seeing people as groups, and productivity is not really a thing in the schools. Like, you won't often hear that word, but you'll hear the word like caseload or workload. And that can kind of equate to productivity if you were to like crunch the numbers.
Interesting, because there's clearly a lot to productivity. I mean, how do we measure the quality of the time with the patient? How do we measure the time that is spent to make that time with the patient better? Things like that. Are there other common measurements that OTs are accountable for?
So I think what happens with productivity that I've seen happen to, and this actually has never happened to me, thank God, but it happens a lot to different therapists, is say they were to have 5 hours of treatment in the building and their hours are supposed to be 8 hours a day. They're not going to allow that therapist to stay for that full 8 hours and get paid for that full 8 hours because their productivity would be so low. So they will ask the therapist to leave the building at 6 hours and 30 minutes. And that's actually happened to me quite frequently. But what hasn't happened to me is sometimes they will make the therapist clock out for their documentation. So that's never happened. You know, I worked at one building and I would go in and it would say 2 hours, 45 minutes of treat time. And then it would give me a time of when I had to leave. So it said 2 hours, 45 minutes of treat time, which means you have to be out of the building at 3 hours and 50 minutes. So I go in that morning not knowing this, thinking I have a full 8 hour shift. And then I learn at 7 a.m. that I'm going to be paid for less than 4 hours of salary. And you don't know. So it's not like you can even plan a doctor's appointment or to meet up with a friend, because you don't know until that day. Because the next day, they might have 7 hours and 30 minutes of treatment time, which means you can be there for the full 8 hours.
Wow. Okay. This could probably be a whole, you know, YouTube video or something in itself of just how to help OTs not get screwed over and know what is appropriate for them to ask and what's not.
And it's really crazy because I'm in so many Facebook groups and I enjoy the community aspect, but it also just feels a lot of blame being tossed around sometimes, because someone will share their story and they'll say, hey, like, I was told that I have to come in from 7 a.m. until 10 a.m. and then clock out and then come back at 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. so I can get the evals after they've come in from the hospital. And they're like being vulnerable, sharing this expectation. And then sometimes the people responding are like, quit that job. You deserve better. Say no. And the person is like, I tried to say no, and they told me this is the expectation or you don't have a job. And that might be the only job that is available in that area for that person. Or they might have already applied to several jobs in the area and can't find their way out yet. So I feel bad because I feel like people don't really have this like safe space to talk about this without feeling like it's them not doing enough to advocate. When it's really like a systemic issue, that makes sense. Like, we need advocacy at a much higher level, especially, you know, if someone is like, say someone's a single parent and this is the job that they have to have, like they don't have another choice. So they don't have that luxury of walking away and saying like, nope, I'm not doing that. Like, they don't have that option available right now.
So we need more OTs to be policymakers and in the corporations.
1,000,000%. 1,000,000,000%.
Okay, listener, could be you.
Yes. Well,
if someone had looked out for me, you look out for the next person, maybe. Wow. Okay, so kind of on that vein, there's this concept I really love, that applies to everything, every sport, every job, and that is the crap sandwich. Not just meaning, you know, what about the job is really hard, but what about the job is hard, but you can kind of love it. Like, if you can convince yourself that, you know what, bring it on. I like that. I'm good at it. You can really succeed. You know, for like, I played volleyball in college, and our team, this was like our mantra, you know, the crap sandwich was getting in the gym at 6 a.m. every morning. And it's kind of grueling. It's not fun. But if you can tell yourself like, yes, this is what I like, here we are, we're up early, it feels good, then, you know, we played a lot better. So is there something about OT that it's a crap sandwich, but if you have, you're one of those weird people who likes it, or you can convince yourself you like it, it's going to make your job way easier, more fun, all those things.
Yes. And I don't think it has to be anything you convince yourself of. I think it happens so naturally. And it's just the time with the patients. For me, my favorite patients or clients are like the pediatric population. So being around them, just being with them is makes it worth it. And I think that is what fills a lot of OT, PT, SLP's hearts is being with the client. Like that part is amazing because you typically are one-on-one. So you know that your words matter. You know that this interaction matters and you can see their progress. You can see that by the end of the session, maybe they had something that was really heavy and weighing them down and they look so much better. Like they just look happier and they look, they'll say thank you. Like I think thank yous go a long way. And I think time with the clients is 100% the best part of being an OT is just being able to help. I think we're all here to like heal and help. And it's very, very easy to soak in those moments if you take the time to.
Is there a part that's maybe not as fun and rewarding, but does make the time with the patient better?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I think that for me, kind of going back to that salesman thing, there have been so many times where I'm expected to work with a patient and they're in a bad mood. And I know that they're in a bad mood and I feel for them because it sucks. They're in the hospital. They don't feel well. They've had people poking, prodding. They probably didn't sleep last night. Their roommate probably snores. They can't go to the bathroom when they want to go. They have to ring the stupid bell and no one answers for hours. And I feel for them. At the same time, it's not my fault when I walk in the room and they're kind of projecting a lot of their stuff onto me. It's not my fault that they're here and that I'm trying to do therapy. So I think I just spend a lot of time like almost being like a psych therapist in a way, like just trying to get like see what's wrong, letting them know that they're heard, because I think that's huge is like oftentimes they just don't feel like they're being heard. And I think if you give them that chance to just have a listening ear, I think 9 out of 10 times they'll come around. So to answer your question, that it's very draining for me, but I do notice that at the end of the session, they seriously look better. It's just me that looks much worse because
it's literally like you're giving them your life force.
Yes. And that's something I need to work on. And I know that there's ways to protect that at like an energetic level, but I'm just such a newbie at this. So I think that, yes, there's totally times where you're with the patient and it's just not, it's not a pleasure at all, but it's still rewarding. It's just like also trying to figure out a way to protect yourself.
Okay. So if you can figure out how to master the like ingratitude and frustration sometimes that patients have, then you could get to that rewarding place and yeah, not be so drained at the end of the day. Because that does sound really hard to do, but really necessary.
And I honestly think, at least for myself, and all of this is just for myself, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are like, nope, not me. But for myself, I feel like if I just had that 5 minutes to decompress between patients, it would be life-changing because I can like let their stuff go. Because I end up holding it. And if I just had a chance to like let it go go to the bathroom, wash my face, or, you know, do something that just means like, let's get this off of me. But I feel like a lot of times we leave that patient and immediately we go to the next room. And usually we're met with someone who is pretty grumpy and unhappy. And, you know, not everyone. Coming back to your percentage, I would say like 40% of the patients I typically see are having a hard time. And there's probably 60% who are so freaking nice that it, like, it's just unbelievable to like see the range of personalities, because you'll go in someone's room and it's the total opposite. They want to help you and they see you and they're, you know, just this beacon of light that is just living their life trying to like build you up, and you feel it, and then you're kind of like guilty, but then you're also like, I love being around you. I want to help you get better. We are going to get you walking. And it's those moments that I think really help you get through the day.
I could just hear your enthusiasm and your passion just like explode, just thinking about and talking about, like picturing walking into the room and seeing a patient like that. It was really cool.
And it does happen a lot. Those patients do happen a lot. It's just that there's all different people in the streets and all different people at schools. And there's all different people who are sick and need help.
In what ways do you feel that OT school prepared you well for your career?
I'm going to need a minute.
We could start with the other question too, which is, you know, in what ways were there big discrepancies in what you learned at school and then what you actually did in real life?
Let's start there. I hope this isn't coming off pessimistic.
I kind of answered the question already, but yes. Hey, it's about being real, so.
I think that the biggest shock, and it's probably hard to believe if you listen to this podcast, but I was the OT advocate. I totally bought into OT's message, its vibe. I was there, and I felt so passionate about choosing the right major, and that I just knew that this was the right career for me. So I just felt like there was a real lack of what it's actually like. So when I started working, I really blamed myself a lot. And I like pretended that it was what I enjoyed, even though it was like killing me. And I was coming home and, you know, I don't have good coping skills. So I'd like eat my feelings from the day. And I put so much blame on myself for not handling this therapy world well. And then, you know, if you reach out to someone you trust, like say I were to tell my parents, I'd be like, wow, it's like really hard. And then you get feedback that's, well, it's the real world, get used to it. And I just felt there wasn't enough conversations about just what life looks like, and that it's not you. It's just that, you know, nothing is perfect. So when you're taught that a career is so perfect and so amazing, and then it's just not, you know, it is different. So that was just such a shock to me completely.
Yeah. What could current prospective OT students do, knowing all this, to try and get more out of their education?
I would say ask questions about what the professors are doing. What, like, real life stories? Like, say you were to get just one real life story a class. Say you're learning about Parkinson's. Like, ask the professor, like, oh, can you share like one story where you worked with a person with Parkinson's and it was really successful? And then can you share one where it's hard and didn't really work out? Hey everybody, I am so genuinely excited to tell you about MedBridge. So MedBridge is a continuing ed site, and they have tons of continuing ed courses all available online. You can stream them at your own pace. They also have home exercise plans, which are incredible. You can literally build your own plan with pictures that can perfectly suit whatever client you're working for. It's honestly so awesome. And you get unlimited CEUs. And these CEU courses are just really intriguing and exciting. Like, I've done continuing ed online in the past, and these ones that they select are just very much in line with what I find interesting, and I feel like you might find them interesting as well. So Are you struggling with finding the resources for your time for CEUs? With almost 2,000 accredited evidence-based streaming courses, live CEU webinars, MedBridge is your all-in-one solution. And actually, if you use my code, it's Spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT. So Spill the OT, one word, capital S, capital T, capital OT. You can get $175 off of your year-long subscription, which is awesome. I mean, that's like significant amount of money off. So if you are interested, please go check it out. Again, use the code Spill the OT, capital S, capital T, capital OT, all one word. All right. I really hope that you go check it out. Enjoy. So maybe two stories, but if you could just get one or two real examples of something really positive, something really negative. And I guess also keep in mind, and I am saying this with so much love, but a lot of times people who are drawn to the education field, it's probably likely that they felt that the clinical side of things wasn't really for them. Because what would have made them end up going into academia? Probably because either A, they've always wanted to, or B, they tried the clinical route and it just wasn't resonating. So maybe finding out why that wasn't resonating with them, because you can go to OT and know from the beginning that you want to do research, or know from the beginning that you want to do advocacy or go into academia. There's so many routes, but not a ton of support on how to find those paths. Because in school, I did feel like there was a lot of like, oh, you can work in mental health and you can work in community health and you can help people in the homeless population. But then you search on Indeed and you just find, well, where are these jobs? It sounded like this is what OTs do, but where are they? How can I get paid? And then you find out that more or less you have to build that on your own through networking or through your own creativity, which we all, most of us have, but not a lot of support on how to navigate that path.
Okay. Well, I'm getting to about to my last question. Awesome. So before I do that, is there anything I haven't asked that you wish I had?
No, I just feel like sometimes when I start talking, I think I do kind of harp on what's on my mind. And I think what's on my mind is just that I want people to have like a healthy balance of that, what to expect, but also like keep that optimism, because our field is changing and it's changing rapidly. And it's people like anyone who's listening, people like you who are hearing this, and we can do better. There's so many ways in which we can do better and grow. So keep the optimism alive, even though it might not sound like I'm optimistic. I really am.
Well, prove it then, because the final question that you ask everyone, now I get to ask you, knowing all of this, all the student loans, would you do it again?
Oh my gosh. At this point, yes. If you asked me a couple of years ago, I don't think I was ready to be optimistic. But at this point, OT has taught me a lot. I really, truly believe that we are all helpers. And PTs and speech. I want to include them all too, because I think the rehabilitation field as a whole, we are healers and helpers, and we do something that is very special, and I'm very proud to be a part of that.
Well, I want to end just by saying thank you, because, you know, like you said, while people shrugged and said, hey, it's the real world, tough, that is such an unsatisfying answer to real problems. Mm-hmm. This idea of, well, it is what it is. Okay, I was stealing this from someone, but it's, you know, saying it is what it is means it isn't what it should be. And so we can't fix any of those problems unless we talk about them, unless we're honest about them and call it like it is. And so I know I'm like brand new person here in this world, but I already want to say thank you, you know, for helping make the field a friendlier, more successful, more opportunistic space for all of us with the platform that you give. So I'm really grateful. I know I speak for all your listeners when I say we are so, so thankful for you.
You are so sweet. Thank you. Thank you everybody for listening, because this is a dream of mine to just be able to share my experience. If I can help just one person, it means a lot to me. So I'm very grateful. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And as I mentioned, a couple of little updates, and these are just going to be teasers. I'll be letting more information out later. But number one, I am taking a break. The end of season two is today, and season three will be back in September, September 1st. And then, as mentioned in the interview, I really want to work on building a community where we can support each other and build each other up. I know that there are a lot of avenues for OTs to communicate, like on Facebook groups and different things, but I do feel like sometimes there's just a lot of heaviness and a lot of people maybe feeling stressed or scared, and that's why the support system isn't totally supportive and positive all of the time. And of course, you know, any support system, it's never going to be 100% positive, but I'm really trying to spread the message of joy, love. That's my whole mission. So there will be more information to come, but know that I have all of you in mind. I have gotten all your emails and messages, and you are incredible. You listening. Yes, you. You are wonderful. So thank you for listening. I hope that you have a great couple of weeks. I will be back. Please subscribe. Please rate and review the podcast with your questions. And make sure you're checking YouTube. I have some content coming out on there. Please follow me on Instagram. I'll be putting some teasers on there as well. It's spill_the_OT. And if you need me, you can also email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. And I will talk to you soon.